This is Weekday. I'm Steve Scheer. In a world of war and pain and niggling little frustrations, do we turn to fantasy for escape? That might be one explanation. But we turn to fantasy by the millions, for movies, for magazines, for games, for books. So perhaps for some, escapism tops the list. But the genre also allows the creators to explore the pressures we are confronting in our daily lives. Education. Can we learn something about the turmoil in Iraq, the collapse of states, the rise of terrorism through the eyes and words of fantasy writers? Opening up the doors of perceptions, does all the dreaming, the world, the wordplay, and the world play expand our minds, enliven us, embolden us in our everyday lives? Oh, and finally, it's just a good fun, flying beasts, magic, and moving from place to place without the burden of fuel, oil, without the trauma of a traffic jam. Terry Brooks has been writing since high school. His Sword of Shannara series began in 1977. He has revisited it again in the High Druid of Shannara. Now, you say I was going to ask you how to pronounce this word before we started.
You're saying it the way that everybody else says
it. So please do.
You know, I say Shannara. But we live in a democracy, the last I heard.
No, I have to say it.
Oh, that's gone?
So what is it? Is it Tanquil?
Tanaquil.
Tanaquil. Okay.
That's good.
Shannara, Tanaquil. I just want to get it right. But 21 books in between. Brooks trained as a lawyer, worked at it for a while, but the words were calling. He joins us in our studios, as you know. Greg Keyes studied anthropology. He ironed newspapers. He played the Capucha Toli.
Yeah, that's right.
A Choctaw game, which he's going to tell us about. And he writes, from the Waterborne to the Age of Unreason series, and now the Kingdoms of Thorn and Bone series with the Charnel Prince. He joins us as well. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for asking.
But I just have to do this because you mentioned it. You were an intern in Washington, D.C. for a while?
Oh, yeah. We were just talking about this years ago. In 65, actually, was the year. I worked as an intern, congressional intern, in John Anderson's office. He was congressman at that time in Illinois. And I was mentioning that Donald Rumsfeld was on a committee, the first-year congressman or second-year congressman, I guess, maybe. And so I kind of got to spend some time with him and some of the other up-and-coming lights at that time. It was pretty interesting.
So is he in any of your books, in any of the characters of your books?
You mean, is he a troll or something? No, he's not. I'm not getting that specific yet with characters.
Oh, I just wondered if sometimes, I think it was in an interview you were doing, Greg Keyes, where somebody was asking about good and evil and in a world where things are framed in good and evil, it seems ripe for the fantasy world as well. And it seems like there's a blurring there of fantasy and reality when we speak entirely in terms, we don't, but I mean, when our leaders speak in terms of this black and white, this good and evil. So I don't know if you feel like you're living in one of your novels right now or not.
I think there are things that are good and things that are evil, but I tend to think of them as actions. I tend to think of those words as adjectives rather than nouns, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So I have a personal compass. I think there are some things that are absolutely right and some things that are absolutely wrong. But I think that there's a very complicated gray line between them. And the thing is that when something happens, something traumatic and unspeakable, like 9/11, good and evil and black and white parse out very neatly in our heads for about a week, and then things start getting complicated again.
Your anthropology imbues your work. In historical anthropology, right? You look back in cultures and...
Correct. I mean, what I study as an anthropologist really were belief systems and how those changed through time. I specifically worked with the Native Americans of the southeastern United States, and I looked at how their myths and legends changed over the 300-year period that we have records of them.
I want to dive back in a little bit to the philosophy and then the allure and the appeal of fantasy in our modern times, but just let's just plunge into your two books right now. So just describe this book. I mean, take us to the world for a couple minutes, what you're writing about.
Well, the Kingdoms of Thorn and Bone is, it's not our world, but it's one right next door. Humanity is thrown off the shackles of this alien race called the Skazloi. But in doing so, in defeating the Skazloi, they used a particular kind of magic. And the last of the Skazloi, as he's dying, says, you were better off as our slaves because this is going to come back to bite you in a couple of thousand years. And in the Briar King, that couple of thousand years has come and gone, and it's coming back to bite them.
Terry Brooks, what would you say about where we are now in the in the High Druid of Shannara.
Well, you know, series. I've been in the Shannara books for, 12, 14 books or something like that. So it's been around for about 25 years, and I've had a chance to develop this world. It's a post-apocalyptic world, and we've been following several families in this world and the hierarchy that's grown out of the advent of magic as a replacement for science since that time. And this particular set of books that I'm working on, I'm looking at something I talked about a little bit earlier in this series. I'm looking at what happens when somebody becomes the effectively the leader of a group of people and possibly the defining person in the political hierarchy of a world who is not particularly well-liked.
The Allure of Fantasy this hour with best-selling authors Terry Brooks, Greg Keese. We're talking about their books right now. We have a leader that not well-liked.
Oh, yes.
And you were talking about.
Now this is not based upon any real person, but the idea is that what happens when you're placed in a position of power and you don't have the trust of the people that you're leading. And the main character in this set of books I've been working on now for several years is Grianne. And Grianne, as a child, grew up with the belief that the world was a different way and that she was something else than what she was. And so she believed this and did a lot of bad things because of it. And it was only at the end of the first set of three books that I wrote that she discovered the truth about herself and about who she was. So she, because she is an extremely powerful sorceress, became the leader of the Druids. And she's struggling now with the fact that she's not trusted.
These people live for you?
Oh, yeah.
The way you describe them, the Druids, I mean, it's like some folks you're going to go visit a little later.
Well, you know, it is like that. Not a little later, like right now. I basically tell everybody, I think that as a writer, you live in the world of your books all the time. You're never totally out of it. You have a foot in the real world of carrying out the garbage and doing the ironing or whatever, but you also have a foot in the world of your writing.
Does that work for you? Does it work that way for
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. When I'm actually writing, I'm completely immersed. And one thing I actually learned a long time ago was that if, for instance, my wife's coming home at 6, I have to stop writing an hour or an hour and a half before she gets home, because otherwise I'm irritated at the interruption from being drawn out of this world that I've so thoroughly put myself into.
Well, how did you come to do this? Because you weren't originally, I read that you were from a family of storytellers, you studied anthropology, you did the ironing of newspapers. But how did you come to decide or... Because you did decide, right, to become a fantasy writer.
Well, you know, I decided that when I was 6, you know, when I first understood that there was such a thing as a person who got paid to write.
You were going to do that?
Yeah, because I love to read. You know, I grew up mostly in places without television, and books were my, you know, way of accessing the rest of the world. And I was just determined. You know, I wrote a book a year for about 5 years until I sold one.
You wrote a book a year for 5 years?
I did. You know, I set myself a goal of writing a book a year, and I met that goal. And, you know, I didn't sell the first four, and the fifth one I sold.
You do a lot of research for your books, a lot of research into history and the, as we talked about, the myths of cultures.
It depends on the book. The Age of Unreason, since it was actually set in the 18th century, I did a really ridiculous amount of research on. And, you know, like what kind of shoes were they wearing in Louis XIV's court in 1715? I don't know. I have to go find that out. And some of it was interesting and some of it was boring, but it took me to some really interesting places, and I really enjoyed writing those books. Books like The Briar King I read more for inspiration. So I go back and read the Iliad again. I read Beowulf again. I read, you know, obscure Irish epics, and I read...
Looking for what?
Things that inspire me, things that that strike a chord in me. For instance, in The Briar King, there's probably one of the toughest scenes in the book is a murder... that I think comes really out of nowhere to the reader. But for me, it was inspired by a child ballad called The Cruel Brother that I was aware of a long time ago, but I'd sort of forgotten it. And I was going back through the child ballads, and I hit this visceral song. Essentially, in the song, what happens is they're a family, and the youngest girl, the sister, goes off, and she comes back, and she's engaged. And she asks her older brother for permission to marry, but she forgets to ask the younger brother for permission to marry. And on the day of her wedding, the younger brother says, "Let's take a walk." And he takes her out, and he stabs her and kills her. And he said, "You should have asked my permission." That was something that I hadn't, for instance, when I outlined the book, I hadn't planned on including anything inspired by that. But in my reading, I ran across that, and I said, "Oh, yeah, this fits right here."
Greg Keese is right now writing the Kingdoms of Thorn and Bone series, and Charnel Prince is the second of that. Does that work ethic sounds familiar to, I believe, how you described your work ethic? Because you were working as a lawyer, right, and raising kids before you cranked out your first.
Yeah, I was like Greg, though. I knew I wanted to be a writer early on. I waited till I was 10 to make this decision rather than 6. But it was the same idea. And I, like Greg, did not know how to get there and didn't see any financial rewards on the horizon. So I became a lawyer to support myself, thinking that would be a good way to get close to people's emotions and problems and be inspired.
All right, so let me read you this email from Hunter, because I know you get these questions as well, or you deal with them. I'm a longtime reader of speculative fiction. As a child, I read little else, and I still enjoy a good space opera from time to time. However, I'm mixed when it comes to such genre labels. As an amateur writer, I find that it's really hard to avoid being pigeonholed by the amateur writing community if I write a book involving anything fantastic. A handful of writers have been able to escape this. Margaret Atwood, Ursula Le Guin, Haruki Murakami, and others have succeeded in gaining enough of a reputation to get wonderful works of speculative fiction into the general lit sections. But the literary significance of so many others are overlooked because of the stigma of the genre lit. And then he encourages people to read that. Does it bother you at all? Do you care, Terry Brooks?
You know, I think it used to be a bigger issue than it is now. You know, Harry Potter and some of the others have made the world safe for fantasy. All of a sudden, you know, everybody is who is writing in almost any field is stealing from the fantasy field, using their tropes, using their characteristics, blending the different forms together.
And the serious writers are writing children's books, fantasy books?
Oh, sure they are. You know, and I mean, if you spend any time looking at what's out there, you can tell that there's less clear definition between one form of fiction writing and another.
We're talking with Greg Keyes, who is writing in fantasy genre. Can I say that?
Sure.
All right, you don't mind that. All right. He's written The Waterborne, Age of Unreason, and now the Kingdoms of Thorn and Bone series. The second is The Charnel Prince. Terry Brooks has been writing since high school. The latest of his Shannara series, The High Druid of Shannara, Tanaquil, he's put out, 23 books altogether, right?
I think that's right.
Let me read you this email, a little tangent. The world of modern science fiction and fantasy is awash with well-known male writers. Even people who never read Lord of the Rings have heard of David Eddings, Terry Goodkind. Lately, I've been reading talented females, up-and-comers like Louise Marley and Elizabeth Hayden. While they can hold their own against their male contemporaries as storytellers, and their sales figures are nothing to sneeze at, when I mention them to fellow fantasy enthusiasts, all I get are blank looks. But he asks, why is it so hard for women to get name recognition in these genres? Do you think it is?
I don't. Actually, I would disagree with that, and I want Paul to get some new friends.
Yeah.
You know, that's my first thought. When I broke into the business, the audience was young and male, and the writers in the field were also pretty much exclusively male, with a few exceptions like Anne McCaffrey and so forth. But now the field is filled with wonderful female writers who have done great work. There's what's that name of that Potter woman that wrote that Potter book? That remember those?
Four or five.
That she's pretty well known. And there's numerous others, really, who have had less success and have done incredible work. And I think that their names are as well recognized in the field as those of their male counterparts.
Let me ask you about writing outside your worlds. Both of you have written this in the Star Wars world, mm-hmm. right? The universe of Star Wars. You wrote The Phantom Menace, right? Mm-hmm. And you're working on the New Jedi Order, which is some place in the future of past the Star Wars movies that we know now.
Yeah, it takes a place. It starts about 22 years after the Return of the Jedi, and so it's while a lot of the favorites are still around, you know, Luke and Leia and Han.
So what? I guess I have two questions. What's it like to work in that? Do you see yourself as a hired gun, or are you trying to expand a universe with your own sensibilities?
Well, you know, it's both, and I've had people phrase that in another way. Like, how constrained did you feel, for instance, in working in the Star Wars universe? Well, for one thing, it was it was flattering to be asked to work in the Star Wars universe. You're always mindful that it is George Lucas's universe, and it's also a universe. The expanding universe is one that's been built by other writers. At the same time, I actually had a lot more. Creative latitude than I ever imagined I would. In particular, that there was a class of bad guy called the Shapers that very little was known about, and they said, run with it, just figure out what they are. I almost think of it as of its own, as its own literary form. When you're writing Star Wars, you're restrained by the rules of the Star Wars universe and the sensibilities of the Star Wars universe. So there are boundaries you don't cross, but those are given from the beginning. But within that, there was still a lot of fun to be had, and I had fun.
Have you met the big man behind the curtain?
Yeah, actually, I was asked to do Phantom Menace as the inaugural book for Del Rey when they got back into publishing the Star Wars series. It went over to Bantam for a while there. And I think they were looking for a writer who had immediate name recognition and also somebody who wasn't attached to the Star Wars world. And that was kind of the appeal. But I basically said I wasn't sure this is something I wanted to do because, I didn't need to do it. And I just felt like it would be a really cool thing to do. But I wasn't sure about Lucas, so I got to meet him and spend time with him. And what I liked about him right away was how willing he was to give me an opportunity to rework his script in the book form. He was giving me a tremendous amount of latitude, and I hadn't really expected that. And he even encouraged me to approach it from the viewpoint of Anakin Skywalker. And we were talking about, what you can do to recreate a world and make it interesting. Well, here's this kid, who's going to turn into Darth Vader. And I saw the script, and there's not a lot that tells you how that's going to happen. So that gave me some latitude to talk about his younger years and sort of give a shape to the character that would eventually be subverted and become Darth Vader. And that was great.
Greg Keyes and Terry Brooks, our guests. Larry writes, when I was younger, I immersed myself in fantasy novels from Heinlein to Le Guin. I even had time for the rambling sagas of people like David Eddings. Now I prefer to get my fantasy in shorter, more intellectually complex bites, The Life of Pi, the Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. But thank you guys for opening doors. Fiction has changed in my life, and I appreciate the erosion of category. Do you appreciate the erosion of category in that sense?
Well, I think I appreciate the fact that we're not quite the ghetto fiction that perhaps we once were, and that it's there's a lot of what you might term literary fiction being done in our field, and so we're not considered to be just a commercial anymore.
Well, so what is the nature of the universe in terms of fantasy and science fiction? I mean, what is the allure? What is the importance of it today?
I don't even know the answer to that. I mean, I can sort of make guesses at it, and I can pretend that I know. But really, my major concern as a writer is telling an engaging story, and that's really the bottom line. And I choose to work in a particular medium, but if it's doing something to make us all better, if my books is in any way improving the world beyond the story I tell, it's pure happenstance because it's not designed by me to do that.
I like that answer. What's your answer as well, Terry Brooks?
I think that it would be very much the same. I think the storytelling is what counts for any kind of reading, no matter where you are. And some of the strongest storytelling that's being done now is being done in what is marketed as fantasy.
Thank you for coming and talking to us, both of you.
Thank you, Steve.